don't surround yourself with the people who don't give a shit about you.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. My guest this week is owner, operator, lunatic, creative genius, and whatever else you want to call him, behind Jellyfish Productions. He's a man of many hats, Mr. Sean Jellybean McDonough. Sean and I talk a little bit about his childhood, growing up with a silver spoon in hand and having it all ripped away, and how that's became a driving force in his life. And Sean's a great case of when life breaks bad for you, you don't have to be stuck in that rut, and you can fight your way out of it. And like always, we get all over the place. We actually talked a lot about weddings in this episode, which is kind of funny, but you'll see where it goes. So if you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, go into Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and let us know how we're doing. Also, make sure to subscribe to the show. And if you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, subscribe in whatever your favorite podcast app is. Matter of fact, just pause the podcast right now and go do it. Go ahead. I'll wait. And now that you're back, you can also keep up with us on social media at facebook.com/madeuspodcast or on Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. And if you check out Twitter recently, you'll see my new fascination with a certain documentary that's kind of been forefront in my mind. And we talk about it a little bit on the show as well. Sean was a great guest this week, and I really enjoyed talking with him. Fun guy, really easy to talk to. And it's also great to watch him put his drive into his passion and make his passion a career. So please help me welcome Sean Jellybean McDonough. Sean, welcome.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for joining me tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm happy to have you, buddy.
Heck yeah, man.
And I'm happy that you're drinking out of that Bears mug.
You had to bring it up.
I did.
Yep.
I'm not letting that one get away.
Yeah, it's, my wife would love this because she's from Chicago. My family's from Detroit. I can't believe I'm sipping out of a Chicago Bears Yeti mug.
It's nice, though.
It is nice. I'll give you that. And it was a hard loss in the playoffs.
It was. God, that was it.
I'll give you that.
Oh, man, was it whatsoever. No.
The most important part, though, is what's inside this.
Yeah.
And it tastes great.
It does.
So
it
that's
does.
The most important part.
So, Sean, go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
I'm Sean. A lot of people know me as Jellybean. It's an old radio name of mine.
Where'd you get that name from?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can do that. Jellybean came from high school. I was the fat kid.
Really?
I swear to God, yeah. Well, I'm trying to battle a little bit now. I got a little
shut up, man.
It happens, but you get over 30 and it's a little harder. But I was the fat kid in high school. I was like 25, 30 pounds. I was only 15, 16 years old. It's too much weight for a guy 5'10".
Yeah.
And a guy came up to me. Long story short, he says, "You look like a red jelly bean." I was in gym class. I was wearing red shorts, red shirt, red beet face, because that's just what happens to Irish people, just red beet face. And I thought he was going to kind of beat me up. He's a wrestler. And he comes up, he pokes me on my chest. He goes, "You look like a red jelly bean." I'm like, "Whoa, okay." Next thing I know, coach is calling me Jelly Bean. Everybody down the hallways in high school is calling me Jelly Bean. Girls are like whistling, "Jelly Bean, how are you? What flavor are you today?" I'm like, "Whatever you want, baby. Whatever you want." So I just kind of took it, made a negative into a positive because all the girls seemed to like it.
Yeah.
They asked what flavor I was. And then when I got into radio, they said, "Hey, you know, do you have a nickname?" I'm like, "Everybody knows me as Jelly Bean." And everybody started laughing except for one program director. And he said, "You know what? I've never heard of Jelly Bean on the radio. That's going to stick. People are going to remember that."
Yeah, that's a great way to market yourself for sure.
Yeah, kind of took off. So that's my radio name. I still kind of go by it on the old Facebook. And now I own a production company, DJ Weddings, living the dream, trying to do as much as I can.
What's the name of your company?
Jellyfish Production. So it comes from Jelly Bean, and then my radio mentor growing up in radio, his radio name is Catfish.
Yep.
Combined the two names and came up with Jellyfish Production. So have a lot of fun producing and DJing on the side.
Nice. What do you guys do with that?
So weddings, dances, parties, and then on the production side, like Monday through Friday, we do a lot of commercial production, branding campaigns, jingles, you know, all the...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a lot of the jingle campaigns. We like to tap into that world, help clients who have a vision, but they don't know how to hone it in a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, and we also kind of help some radio stations, too.
Yeah.
You know, with their imaging and with their vibe, so...
So you're almost like a marketing company as well.
Pretty much, yeah. And we actually work with a lot of independent marketing consultants.
Okay.
Because they have a lot of clients, and then they need production work done.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Heck yeah.
Speaking of that, this is totally way off topic.
No, you're good.
Have you watched the Fire documentary?
I have not.
Holy shit.
Is it good?
That's a marketing company gone wrong right there.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. I watched, so there are two documentaries. There's one on Netflix called Fire.
Okay.
And there's one on Hulu called Fire Fraud.
Okay.
F-Y-R-E. They both came out last week.
Oh, I saw it on Netflix.
Yeah, about the Fire Festival.
Right.
Holy shit. That was craziness.
The party that never happened?
Yeah, the party that never happened. Have you heard anything about that?
I just saw a quick trailer.
This guy starts a firm to contract artists. Okay. So basically, he had a company. He wanted to reach out to Ja Rule and have Ja Rule play a party. He had a super hard time getting a hold of Ja Rule. Eventually, he got a hold of Ja Rule, booked Ja Rule for this party. And he's like, this shouldn't be this hard. You know, he partnered with Ja Rule to make this company called Fire Media.
Okay.
And the idea was that you could just contact them. They would contact an artist and book it for you.
Nope.
It was just like a booking company,
oh,
right?
I see where this is going.
Yeah. So that started. So it was him and Ja Rule. His name was Billy McFarlane is the guy's name.
Okay.
They started this company and they, I mean, just going at it. And they did like, oh, we're going to throw a festival like to promote this thing. So they went down to the Bahamas and they found this island. Turns out it's Pablo Escobar's private island.
You're fucking kidding me.
No. So it's Pablo Escobar's private island. They talk to the lawyers that own the island, the family that owns the island, whatever. They're gonna get this island from them. Under one condition, they can't say that it's Pablo Escobar's private island.
Holy shit.
Literally in the first media blast, they put out a party at Pablo Escobar. So literally they take all the rights away. I'm like, nope, you can't have this now.
Oh my God. And they already built everything up for it.
So they've already put all this promotion out for this festival.
Yeah.
So they go find this other area and it's off of some other Bahama island. I think it's called, I don't even know what it's called, but they get this other property and they Photoshop the property they have to make it look like an island.
Oh my God.
But it's literally like when they pull it up, they're like, the fucking Sandals Resort is right there. You can see it.
Terrible.
So it just keeps snow. I mean, like, I'm not going to ruin it for everybody. You should go watch it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to probably watch it tonight now. You got me really intrigued.
It's the most ridiculous. I've watched the Netflix documentary twice.
Okay.
And I watched the Hulu one once. I watched the Netflix and the Hulu one today.
Which one's better?
I think the Netflix one is better. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it floors me that he's got several people going, I think we should stop.
And he keeps going.
And he's just like, no, we got this. Don't worry.
Wow.
And he doesn't let anybody know, like, any of the finances. So they're like, this will cost this much. Yep, cool. Go with it.
Swiping the
$35 million. Yep, go for it. Whatever. Keep going.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And it's all true.
It's all true.
Wow, that's the fascinating part about it. See, when I first saw it, I was, the trailer for it, I was like, oh, that's just, you know, I'll catch that whenever I can. But now I'm intrigued because it was true. I didn't know it was a true story.
Yeah, it's totally true.
Crap.
As far as I know, I looked it up afterwards because the first time I watched it,
yeah,
I was like, is this just like a faux documentary because it's so ridiculous?
Yeah.
And I looked, it's all out there.
Nice.
So it's supposedly true.
It's a good wormhole to get into then on Netflix.
Yeah. It was good.
Heck yeah.
Man, it was craziness.
Heck yeah.
The whole thing of it is just crazy. The guy keeps going. They get all these people there. They actually get them there to this festival, even though they don't have anything set up.
Yeah.
And literally, they don't have any way to get these people back. There's no place for these people to stay.
Yeah. Like, it kind of reminds me of that Mark Wahlberg movie that was based on a true story, Grind, and I was out like 7 years ago.
Oh, I have no idea.
And I can't remember it. Long story short, though, it's so asinine. It's so out of this world that you're watching the movie that the directors and producer did such a great job. They actually put in the text, you know, they pause the movie. You know, I'm sitting there in the theater, and they pause it, and they go, this is still a true story.
Oh,
you
know, wow.
It's just not, I can't, I'm drawing a blank. It's with Mark Wahlberg, though. It wasn't the greatest of movies, but it was such a wild, true story.
So yeah.
Kind of sounds like it.
Man, it's crazy. And I wasn't going to watch it. And, you know, if you, like, scrolling through Netflix and you stop on something, it'll autoplay the trailer.
Okay.
And that's what it did. I was at work, and I was, like, scrolling through looking for something, and it just autoplayed the trailer. I'm like, I think I'm going to watch this.
Nice.
And I was floored by it. Like, I just cannot believe the irresponsibility and like the flat out, just like the guy is just a psychopath. Like,
and how far it went.
Yeah. Just, I guess psychopath, not sociopath.
There you go.
Like just crazy. Yeah.
He just wouldn't let the fire go out.
No, absolutely not.
Man.
He just kept going.
Now you got me intrigued.
Up until like it's day two of the festival and they're still trying to pull it off, even though it's not there.
You made it through 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
Man.
Oh boy.
It's funny. Good old Netflix.
Yeah, when I saw that, I just couldn't believe it. And I'm like,
well, obviously, it did something to you because you watched it several times.
I've watched it twice, three times.
Wow.
The Netflix one.
And the Hulu one.
And the Hulu one.
See, that's impressive.
Well, after I didn't even realize there was a Hulu one, and then somebody like said that like they put out two. They put out like
several,
and I'm like, wait, what? So I went and found the Hulu one today and watched it.
Man,
and it blows my mind.
Crazy.
Yeah, and the guy's just like I said, he's a sociopath. Like he just they're interviewing him in the Hulu one, like mm-hmm. after this, like completely interviewing him, and he's like, no, that didn't happen. And they're like, it happened. Like we have it. Like you can see it.
All documented. Yeah. Wow. Man, and try to be able to pull that party off still. For what benefit? Is this like he was just digging himself a bigger hole? Wow.
Yeah.
Now you got me super intrigued with that.
Yeah, you're going to have to watch it.
Definitely.
And the listeners are going to have to watch it if you have Netflix.
Definitely will.
So the reason we kind of brought you here tonight.
Yeah.
Is I know that you're a very driven person.
Very.
And I'm a very driven person.
Indeed.
It's one thing we definitely have in common. And I want to talk about your drive and kind of where you where that instilled in you.
Probably my parents, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. My mom, man, works her tail off. Dad worked his tail off. Phenomenal businessman, you know, growing up. And then kind of seeing everything, you know, be such glitz and glamour, if you will. Not that we were millionaires by any means, but,
yeah.
You know, growing up in a very successful way for 10 years of your life and then it being gone. Realizing quickly.
What were your parents doing at that time, before that?
Yeah, so my dad is a hoot, man. I mean, my parents are a hoot. You'd love them. But old school hippies, work hard, you know, that old school mentality, work hard, play harder.
Yeah.
My dad was a nursing home director my whole life, and he ran a bunch in Detroit. So all my family's from Detroit. And he ran several, and that's kind of like his upbringing. And then my mom was like the accountant, payroll, part of the business side of it. So she would work at home a lot when I was younger. Anyways, my dad was always traveling, doing business work, nursing home directory, and they decided to start a restaurant business.
Okay.
And that just went to shit. I mean, that just went to absolute, just a little unlucky here or there. Probably should have stuck in the nursing home business industry. And just went to shit. So then all of a sudden, all the money they had saved up went into this establishment.
Yeah.
Everything just is like, you know, they took a big gamble. Sometimes you take gambles and you just fucking lose.
Yeah.
And that's just what ended up happening. So we went from, you know, me and my sister to having rooms full of presents during Christmas time, being spoiled as all get out. Hell, when I was a younger kid, they thought something was wrong with me because I didn't talk. I just had to point to something and my dad would go get it for me. I swear to God. And then they're like, no, he's fine. You're just spoiling him. And then go figure I end up in talking for a living. But, you know, that guy, that went away. And then I'm at, you know, 12, 13 years old and I'm realizing, man, there's no heat in the house. You know, we traveled all around Michigan. My dad tried to get back in the nursing home industry, tried, you know, dabbling back in that, just didn't work out in certain new locations.
So you were old enough to kind of understand what was going on.
Yeah. You know, from a distance, you're still a kid at that point. You look back at it now and you think you knew more, but when you're a kid, you're like, you know, okay, well, just a little rougher now.
Yeah.
Kind of hits you a little harder, though, when you have friends over and, you know, there's no pop in the fridge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like little shit like that. That it's not like a woe is me type moment, but you kind of remember still to this day, like, you know, I remember my mom saying, don't turn on the heat. You know, don't turn on the heat. We can't afford it. Can't afford it.
You know, it's weird too when you grew up. And obviously you kind of had that switch in there, but it's weird. You know, we didn't grow up with money necessarily. So you don't, when you're younger, that's just life. You don't really quite realize that you're poor.
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. You know, that's how it was with us is we had generic everything. We didn't have anything that was brand name. We didn't have, you know, like you said, we didn't really have pop. We had, you know, we had Aldi's pop or whatever it was.
Sure.
And you didn't realize that that wasn't normal as a kid, you know, until you get older. So you kind of had that just snatched away from you that you kind of realized it was there.
Yeah. It was like the reverse way.
Yeah. And you said you were what, 12, 13 when that happened?
Pretty much. Yeah. You know, just went to shit, man. It was just like a tumbling snowball almost. And
so they opened a restaurant.
Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of restaurant it was?
It was a bar.
It was a bar.
Yep. And then it just went to poop. You know, the previous owners wanted it back, you know, and it was like one of those things. It just became like a hot mess, legal mess. And it's like, whatever. All right. So my dad was like, all right, I'm done with this. I don't want to deal with this anymore after a year or two in the business. And then tried to get back into nursing home. Didn't work out. Just didn't work out. Then he got back into real estate mortgage and slowly, you know, built himself up to where he's like semi-retired now, kind of. He loves watching the you know, his grandkids and whatnot. But, you know, went through that probably 13 to 18 period. Actually, you know, up until when I was 18, my parents were like, it's all you now. You know,
yeah.
Shit. Even before that, it was, you know, I learned at a young age, man, when, you know, it's like you play sports or you go get a job so you can buy a car.
Okay.
And that's what it was, you know, and I'm fine with that, you know,
yeah.
But that's, I look, you know, I remember when I was a cook at a Italian restaurant, I remember cooking people's meals, the kids that I went to school with, because they were going to prom. I was out hustling.
Yeah.
That's all I knew. You know, I'd go to school, you know, 7:30 till 2:30, go to the restaurant from 3 o'clock till 10 o'clock, do homework till midnight, you know, wake up, do it all over again. You know, I've been basically working like full time since I was 16. I'm fine with it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Whereas like, it's not like a woe is me type thing. It's like, that's what I know, because at 12, 13 years old, I saw everything ripped away and I realized, hey, if I want a car, if I want a cell phone, the old Nextel flip phones, I got to go afford one. My mom and dad can't afford one for me. I'm lucky enough to have a house.
Yeah.
You know, they got to pay for that. I'll have to pay for my shit.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to be in that atmosphere. So you're basically in high school at this point.
Yep.
Going to high school, trying to do your classes, and then getting out of high school and going to work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty nuts. Yeah, the day after my 16th birthday, I started working like busing and dishwashing, right?
Yeah.
Just a typical starter off job. Then I got offered a cooking job at that same establishment and really liked it. You know, it was fun. And I ended up, you know, making okay money for 15, 16, or 16-year-old at the time. And could afford my car, could afford insurance, you know. And that was the thing, you know. It's so funny. Like, I talk to parents, you know, and their kids are like 21, 22, and they're still paying for their fucking cell phone.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. You serious? Come on, you know.
No, I see that a lot. I see that a lot, you know, being that I tattoo, and we have parents coming with kids, and we have parents come with older kids, like you said, 21, 22. And you hear what you're talking about, and I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
You know, and they're talking about, well, you know, I can't tell anybody I'm getting this tattoo because my mom will stop paying for my cell phone. I'm like, you're 25.
Get over it.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have a cell phone now.
Like, yeah, I know. You know, in a way, though, as tough as it was, and I'll never forget the moment when I stepped into the shower and I, you know, my feet were burning because, you know, it was the only heat we had in the house. You know, I'll never forget that. But that's what drives me. You know, that's what kind of makes me go. I look at my wife all the time like, hey, I've been in the bottom of the barrel when it comes to like finances. Like, we always had love. That's all that mattered. My parents love me. We're loving family. And that's what got us through all those tough times. But I'm never going to go back in that. You know, not that I'm going to work my ass off to where I don't enjoy life, but I'm going to work so I don't have to do that again.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you're fucking out there busting your butt, man.
Heck yeah, man. Took a big gamble, too. And I thought about it a lot when I started my own company. I was like, man, am I going to do what my dad did? Like, am I going to put ourselves back or am I going to go forward? And sometimes you just have to go, you know, and just make that jump.
Yeah, so I know you left radio.
Yeah.
And then after that, you kind of did a few random sales jobs, right?
Yeah. Dude, I went on a weird sabbatical. Was not planned at all. Just kind of happened. I kind of got burned out in the industry, to be honest with you. You kind of reach a point where you're like, well, I can't grow anymore. I was, you know, I'm happily married and was happily married at the time, still am. And
same person.
100%. Yeah. She's awesome. I love you, Peaches. And she didn't want to move. You know, she loves it here. And I got a couple job offers from around the country, nothing huge, but realized quickly when I got those nibbles and those feedback from some program directors and other radio companies out there that were willing to hire me. And then once I gave that information to her, she's like, I don't want to move. So I realized quickly, all right, I got to stay here. I got to figure something out. So I did like Frito-Lay. I worked for them, sales job, sold phones for a little while, made some bank money.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. You know, in radio, you don't make a lot. You do it more for the fun and more for because you like doing it.
Yeah, the passion of it.
100%. You're not making a lot of money unless you're in sales. So I started doing sales and other companies' jobs and made really good money. Then you realize, well, money doesn't really buy happiness.
Yeah.
And then circle back to a lot of people still asking me to DJ their weddings, DJ their corporate events. And then still a lot of clients like, hey, will you produce a commercial for me still? I'm like, really? You know, I haven't been in the game in, you know, a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even on the air anymore. And they still kept after me. So I had one guy message me on Facebook. He said, hey, man, I got a wedding next year. Are you available? I wasn't even promoting myself, and it was like the ninth person that reached out to me to do a wedding. I'm like, well, there's $9,000 I just said bye to.
Yeah.
Why don't I start a company? And I did, and it's just boom, just took it, it's taken off.
Yeah, that was kind of the turning point for you?
100%. You know, I'll never forget, I was on the John, actually. I was, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit it. We all got our phones on. I was taking a shit, and, you know, bling, Facebook message comes up, and this guy who is a radio listener lives in Chicago now. He says, hey, man, get married. This is where I'm getting married at locally. Want to see if you're available. Plus, you know, can you? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, I can. And before I said that to him, though, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, this is the ninth person in 7 months that I've declined, that I might decline an opportunity to make money in something that is easy to me and slash I really like doing. It's fun being a part of someone's wedding, providing the entertainment, the music, and letting everybody have a good time.
Yeah, you become a big part of that. You know, I know with our wedding, we had a good DJ.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with the DJ we had. Happens to be a friend of ours as well.
Sure.
But he's a professional DJ and puts it out there. And we had a lot of great compliments because We had this professional DJ putting out a good show, putting, you know, keeping everything in order, keeping everything in line.
Yeah.
And we, you know, like I said, we had a lot of people like, oh, that was really good. And then we've gone to other weddings where you're like, I've left a wedding.
Yeah.
Because the DJ was so piss poor.
I know it.
The, you know, they had the music was so loud, you couldn't hear anything. And it was like, I feel bad, but I can't be, I have a headache.
Yeah. Yep.
So your skill set, you know, and being able to do it well makes a big difference.
It really does, man. You don't think of it. It's one of those things where people just kind of think you go there and plug in.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not the case, man. There's so much behind the scenes work. It's astounding, really, if you have a good DJ, the professional DJ that was like at your wedding. You know, the guys who are talking and, you know, are communicating with the venue, communicating with the photographers, if there's videographers there, you know.
Yeah, we joked that he was like our wedding planner.
You almost become a wedding planner.
Yeah, he was definitely our day of wedding planner. Like, he had everything
lined up.
Everything lined up. He got with the photographer when they were going to do stuff. And got, you know, like you said, got, I mean, just had everything in order.
Yep. It's crazy, though. The industry is it's booming. Everything's outside now, too. No matter what damn time of the year, unless it's snowing out. But it is crazy how much, you know, I guess you don't really know a lot about a business. Or I learned that by going into different, like, sales jobs. You think one thing of one job, and then you get into it, and you're like, wow. And then I start explaining a couple things, like, here and there. Like, when I talk with a bride and groom-to-be, I say, yep, you know, I kind of make sure that if you guys are having champagne, that it's poured before I introduce you. And they're like, oh, my God, wow, you're right. How embarrassing would that be if we're, like, trying to toast?
Yeah.
There's no fucking champagne on it. It's like, yep. We take care of those, like, little nuances.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely a professional part of it. And a lot of people just think, oh, fun job. Don't break your back. It's like, dude, a lot. Why don't you try it?
I'm going to hire Uncle Bob to,
exactly.
Yeah. To play his iPod in the corner.
I got iTunes. I tell you what, my Uncle Bob here is going to take care of us and that Spotify.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've definitely seen it. And it's horrific to watch.
Dude,
like,
it's painful.
Like I said, I've legit left a wedding of a close friend of ours.
Bummer.
It just got to the point and you're like, I can't take it. And we weren't the only ones. I mean, it cleared out quick, you know, because it was just so loud and obnoxious. You could hear, I mean, it was just rattling the place.
So I was doing a Christmas party down at the casino a couple weeks ago, and this guy comes up to me, goes, hey, I'm DJ whatever. I was like, oh, okay, am I supposed to know you? I mean, he was really assertive.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm just checking out your rig here, man. I'm like, oh, cool, man. And he goes, yeah, I just kind of bought a couple entry-level speakers. I got a couple weddings this year, and I just was like, oh, my God. I was, like, cringing inside because, I mean, there is a professional part of it. I mean, one subwoofer I have is over $1,000.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's just one. You know, the other speakers are another $400, $500 a pop. Lapel mic is $300 for your ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so much that goes into it, and some people just think, like, oh, yeah, my cousin, you know, he has iTunes. Okay, great. You know, he doesn't mean he can DJ your wedding.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so much that goes into it. So, yeah. I
see a lot with photographers, too.
Yes.
You get people that get a camera, and they're like, yeah, I'll photograph your wedding.
Yeah.
Like, there's a big difference in photographers.
Huge.
Yeah.
I got a Nikon, too. Fuck, if I know how to use it properly sometimes, you know?
I'm going to do wedding photos with my iPhone.
Yeah. Dude, I'll tell you, phones take great pictures now, but, man, when it comes to, like, your big day,
yeah,
get the right photographer. Get a videographer, too, I would recommend. If you can afford it,
yeah,
man, because you'll end up going back and watching that video is more than you think.
That's one thing we don't have. We don't have any video of our wedding.
I didn't want to do it. And my wife kind of forked out the extra, you know, couple $1,000 that it was for it. And, man, we watch it once a year, you know, for our anniversary.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it is cool, man. It really is. I didn't think it was going to be that cool until we go back and watch it. So I'd recommend doing that stuff. And obviously having good entertainment. Whether, even if it's a band. I don't care. Like, people are, oh, are you afraid of bands? No. There's plenty of business to go around, you know. If the band that you're going to hire, though, make sure that they've done a wedding, they can cater to what people like and recognize. Like, it can't just be their shit that they're playing in their basement.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to play the hits.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure,
that's what it's about.
Yeah, playing what people know.
Recognizable music. That's, I mean, I learned that from radio.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget my first wedding I did by myself, and I tried going outside of the realm just for a song or two, and empty dance floor. And it's like, well, this is why radio plays this in a certain way. And there's certain reasons for rotations and golds and, you know, B-sides and what, you know, there's a reason for it. So, yeah.
People understand it for sure.
100%, man. They get it.
No, that's awesome. And I'm really happy for you that you kind of stuck your neck out there and went for this.
Definitely some guts, too. And I know I've, you know, pissed off some people along the way, some former.
It happens.
You know, but that is going to happen. You know, it's like you're not going to make. you're not going to make something of yourself if everybody's happy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, not every tattoo artist loves you.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Some people are going to really be pissed because of your success.
You know, and the other thing is people, like you said, not everybody's going to be happy with your success. And it's just how it's going to be. And you're not going to please everybody.
No.
I've tried very hard to please too many people, and it stresses me out. When I kind of, I say kind of gave it up, but I stopped. I have never really gave it up. Like, I still kind of fight over that of like, if somebody's unhappy with something, it drives me nuts that I'm trying to figure out how to fix it. However it is that I can do better to fix this, where really that person's probably just an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. And you're never going to win with them.
And I'm never going to win, but I'll stay awake all night thinking about it. And that's hard to do. So you're always going to piss somebody off. I mean, that's just how it goes.
It is too, man. And something that has really taken to me over the last couple of years in starting my own business is, you know, stick with the people that support you. Stick with the people that encourage you. Don't surround yourself with the people who don't give a shit about you. You're never going to change them. They'll either get on board or they just won't. You know, fuck them.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, be yourself. You know, have tunnel vision on what you're good at. You know, that was one thing I learned by when I got out of radio and I did a couple jobs. I'm like, okay, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
But is it natural? Do I like it? You know, sure, am I making good enough money to, you know, provide still? Absolutely. But is it making my life whole?
Like you said, money isn't everything.
It isn't, man. Focus on what you're good at, tunnel vision, stay forward, and block out the negativity.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm going to go back for a minute.
Sure.
You're growing up. You kind of have a little bit of everything, kind of like you said, silver spoon,
yeah,
presents, and then it's all ripped away from you. Do you remember, you know, that switch in your head of like how fast it hit you that like, oh shit, like life is changing?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was right after my 13th birthday. You know, not to go back to the present thing, but it was kind of like, well, shit, there wasn't really a whole lot here this year.
Yeah,
and my parents just being brutally honest with me. I got to credit them for everything, even through the down times and the up times. You know, it's like they were honest, you know, so realizing that and them just coming to me like, look, this is the way it is. We either got a house or you get a snowboard. It's like, well, what do you want?
Yeah.
So when that switch went off, it was kind of a different mindset, you know, and then you just kind of end up having a chip on your shoulder going forward. Like I was more appreciative of everything I got from that point
on. Yeah. Did you have that when you got that chip? Was it to be, you know, like you said, more appreciative, or did you kind of have that chip at your parents at first?
Never held anything against my parents.
Yeah.
You would think a lot of kids would.
Do you think it's because they're like honest with you?
Yes, 100%. Because they treated me like an adult my whole life.
Yeah.
Even when I had the silver spoon, treated me like an adult. When the kids were supposed to be kind of put away for bedtime, you know, they treated me like an adult. Like, hey, you can stay up if you want, but you're still waking up. You know, you still got to go to school the next day. You'll learn. You'll learn that you're going to be tired and you don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it was. I think I just had more of a chip towards the system, if you will.
Okay.
You know, or, you know, trying to make unlucky things lucky, like creating your own luck.
Yeah.
Kind of the way I took it. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, I kind of get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're not letting chance get out there. You're going to create your own chances.
100%. That's kind of what I took. You know, you kind of have my family didn't get lucky or must be nice to, you know, have something handed to you, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Then you kind of end up being more proud of just taking something from the ground up and building it.
Yeah. You know? You see a lot of people that kind of, when they get that raw hand dealt to them, that they just kind of fold.
Yeah.
And they always just maintain that. Yeah. Like you said, they kind of, that woe is me pout, and they just kind of sit there and maintain that, and they never try to build themselves out of that,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a big deal, is to really like say, this isn't going to define me. You know, even though you were young at that age,
yeah,
it sounds like you kind of had that idea of like, okay, this happened. Now I'm not going to let this happen to me.
Yep.
You know, I think that's huge, man.
Yeah, I think, you know, and another credit to family, really. My sister was just influential. Everything that I needed, if I didn't have it right away, since she was a couple years older than me.
Yeah.
Like my first car she bought for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was $1,400. I paid her back every cent. You know, because I didn't have it right away because I had to go get a job, you know.
Yeah.
But my first car she bought is $1,400, and within a year I paid her off.
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? So it's like getting a little help.
That's an awesome sibling.
Because isn't it?
I'm the oldest.
Yeah.
I love my siblings. I didn't buy one of those motherfuckers a car.
That's so funny. Yeah, dude, she's kick ass. She's still kick ass to this day. I still look up to her, even though she's like 4'10". You know, she's a little girl. Man, I remember when I played basketball in 7th grade when we were going through the tough times, had no heat in the house. you know, basketball friends would come on over, had no pop, you know, no candy, no none of that fun shit that you have when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like the uncool kid then, you know, but I was good on the basketball court, so it's like, all right, he's cool. But then, oh man, his house kind of sucks.
Yeah, let's not go over there.
Right. You know, and you know that's happening in the back of your head, so you kind of have that, you know, feeling. My sister, she took me to the basketball practice because we had it in the morning, like, you know, 6 a.m. till 8.
Okay.
And then school started up when I lived up north. School started like 9 o'clock. So she went out of her way before high school started to take me to basketball practice, would hang out in the parking lot and do her homework. I mean, I was blessed with a great family.
Man, your sister is awesome.
She is kick ass. Yeah. Amber's the bomb. She's awesome. Yep. Actually, you did a tattoo of hers.
Yeah.
You killed it. It was the wave tattoo, yep. I think. Yep.
Yep.
She'll be back for a Christmas
tree.
No,
that's awesome. That's awesome because, like I said, I mean, I love my siblings, but they're not that fucking cool.
I think that's how we were raised, though. My dad would always joke around, you never know when you're going to need a kidney. Be nice to your siblings.
No, I joke about that. I love my siblings to death, and I think they're amazing, but I sure as hell didn't buy them a car.
A fucking car, yeah.
Jesus, man, that's crazy.
No, she really went out of her way, man. She, you know, when we needed a lawnmower, she had a line of credit when my parents didn't because shit went sour.
Yeah.
You know, she got us a lawnmower. You know, I mean, little things like that. I could keep you here all night. Stuff that just, you know, we got by through, you know, love and just making it work.
That is huge. You know, again, I say that I didn't do that because I didn't. But I do know, you know, with my wife kind of went through that. Mm-hmm. My wife's family didn't have a lot. She always wanted to play sports. She was athletic. Her parents didn't do anything. They wouldn't take her. They didn't do anything. So when her little brother came up and wanted to play sports, she took him to every practice. Did, you know what I mean? She's like, I didn't get to do this, but I'm not going to let you not do this.
Yep.
You know, because they didn't want to take me or didn't want to do whatever. So I've seen that too. And that love of people is amazing to me.
It is, man. That's awesome of your wife, too, to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, she's a good soul.
Heck yeah.
She takes care of me.
That's what it's about, too, you know? Yeah. That's what it's about, you know? And then, you know, it's funny because going through such, like, tough times with certain things, and you kind of look at what other people argue about, you know? It's like, man, you have no freaking idea.
You know,
there's real shit that happens, and there's real struggle, and, you know, so what? You couldn't get pizza tonight, you know? Whatever.
There's
a lot harder things to go through, so.
Yeah, people are worried about eating, period.
Right. It's like, are we really starving? I think you're okay, you know?
Yeah.
When we lived up north, the grocery store was like 45 minutes away. So, like, unlike, you know, where we're at locally, you know, a quick 10-minute drive anywhere, you'll get to anywhere.
You'll hit a store.
Yeah, exactly. Where when we were at, when we lived up in the UP for a year in Michigan, the Upper Peninsula.
Where'd you live at in the UP?
Crystal Falls.
Where the hell's that?
About 45 minutes from Iron Mountain.
Oh, you're way the hell up there.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're looking at it, I'm using my hand, of course, because I'm a Michigander. If you're like at the UP, so we're right at the bottom.
Okay.
Closer to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So we lived up there for a year. My dad got a nursing home job administrator. There was one like place up there, one gas station, one school, K-12. It's crazy. Crazy. Anyways, you go to a grocery store there, you forget something, it's an hour away. You know, it's like, you're not going to go back and get it. It's not like, oh, shit, I got to go back to the grocery store. That was another thing that I learned, too. You know, my wife will be like, we got like a 15-minute drive maybe from our house to a restaurant that we like. Oh, do we got to drive that far? It's like, fuck, it's 15 minutes. It's just down the road.
You know? Yeah. You know, we got spoiled when we lived where we lived before. We were, you know, we still live by a town, but to get to any family, anything, it was half hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's how it always was. So now for us, you know, I don't want to say we're spoiled now, but we are spoiled now.
Oh, 100%.
But for us, driving is anything. Because like you said, 15 minutes. You're like, fuck, it's 15 minutes.
No
like,
big deal.
I'm used to driving 45.
Like, yep. My commute to school when I lived up north was 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's stupid.
I drove 2 hours a day every day when we lived in Niles.
Really?
Yeah.
For?
I drove my son to school, which was a half hour away.
Okay.
I would go back home, so back a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I would then drive to work, which was a half an hour, and then drive home from work, which was a half an hour.
Damn.
So I drove 2 hours a day, every day.
Not good.
Well, 5 days a week for school.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just became normal. So it wasn't...
Sometimes a commute is fun. You kind of get a chance to like unwind or wind up, get ready for your day, depending on what it is. But you know, I hear stories of people like in the city and whatnot, or my parents when they were growing up when Detroit was like a big city and not what it is now. You know, their commute was an hour and a half to work, and it was like a 20-mile drive, but it still got an hour and a half to get there because of traffic. Man, I've never experienced that, and I don't want to.
No, that's for sure. I've never experienced that. You hear things like that. Or like, you know, we're not far from Chicago. For listeners mm-hmm. who don't know exactly where we're at, but we're not far from Chicago. And you do hear some of that stuff. They're like, oh, it's 50 minutes inbound from whatever. And you're like, that's like 10 miles.
It's not much. You know?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Like, I could walk that far. Like,
so true. So true.
Yeah, we're definitely spoiled here. So as you kind of went through, you know, like I said, you're past this point. You've kind of already had the rug pulled out from underneath you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in high school, going to school, going to work.
School.
Mm-hmm. All this stuff. At what point did it really hit you that you were like, I need to continue to focus on this?
Man, it just never stopped, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like you had that paycheck to paycheck type mentality. You know, not having like health insurance too as a young adult like that too kind of like struck a chord. Like, I better save, you know, X over here just in case, you know, trip over a rock and something happens.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever gone away. You know, honestly, it's one of those things where you just kept going forward, because even though things are much better than what they were, obviously, and they got a lot better, I just kind of kept that same chip of that it is that way.
Yeah.
Just to keep me motivated to keep succeeding or keep going forward, or never to be complacent, never to be content.
Absolutely.
You know, get content, be happy with your relationship, you know, things of that nature. But as far as like a business, as far as your own personal success and your own personal demons that you might deal with, you know, get them out. You know, whatever you got to do to get them out and keep going forward to be all positive, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I get that. It's definitely about continuing to push.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what, if it's a hobby or a job or whatever it is, like just continuing to push forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think in striving to be better is a huge thing.
Yep.
You know, that's one thing that I always try to do. And I'm just as much at fault as any person. You know what I mean? Like, I don't pretend like I'm a professional or perfect at doing this, but yep. I try really hard to like every day kind of push myself to be better at whatever it is I'm doing that day.
Yeah.
You know, you hear that, like that kind of phrase of being like 1% better than you were yesterday, and just continuing to push and be that 1% better.
Yeah.
And that sounds like what you're doing is, okay, I wasn't necessarily happy in radio.
Yep.
Or, you know, it wasn't that you weren't happy in radio. You're happy with some situations.
Just got burnt.
It happens.
Yeah.
You know, then you're like, all right, I'm going to push myself. Like, I'm going to be a sales guy. And you obviously succeeded being sales, and you're like, I can do better than this.
Yep.
Maybe I'm making money, but I can do better maybe mentally if I open my own business.
Yeah.
There's obviously stresses that go with that, but continuing to that drive and pushing yourself. And now you're really killing it, man.
I appreciate that, man.
No, you really seem like you're killing it. I know you're a name around here. You kind of had a name around here. You had a following, but
yeah,
I know now that you're really pushing yourself and becoming something, and I think that's amazing, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You know, still young in the company, in the business world. You know, we'll be going on a year and a half,
okay.
So still young in it. But what I'm doing, I've been doing for so long in radio,
yeah.
And is for as much as I got burnt in the industry, man, without it, there's no fucking way I'd be able to do what I'm doing now.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
There's no fucking way I'd be able to do, like, be able to DJ a wedding, be able to come up with a branding campaign for somebody. Are you serious? There's no way, you know, or to be able to meet some of the people that I have throughout the years, connections with certain bands that maybe have not made it,
yeah.
You know, in the industry, but I've kept good connections with them and their producers and their people. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things that you kind of like realize, okay, you know, I kind of got bent over here, but I'm going to not think of it that way and be positive over here.
Yeah,
and
then it's a learning experience.
100%.
Just kind of continuing to learn through all of that and pick up skills wherever. I've always been a big person that's saying, like, listen to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what everybody's got to say. They might not be telling you the right thing, but you're going to learn something.
Yep.
Even if it's what not to do, you know, you're going to pick up something. And that's something like with tattooing. I met a lot of people through tattooing. And
you're like a therapist almost.
Well, yeah. I guess I mean more so on the actual tattooing end.
Gotcha.
Not just, yeah, that happens too. It's like therapy for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story for another day.
Yeah.
But like on the tattooing end, when I started tattooing, I talked to every tattooer I could find. And I would try to listen to them and learn what they had to say. There's a lot of times where I would listen to someone and go, whoa, this dude's full of shit.
Yeah.
But I would at least listen. And you never know. There are things that I picked up from guys that I never thought I would learn. There's a one tattooer in particular that really wasn't a good tattooer. He tattooed for a long time. He's not tattooing anymore, but really just not a good tattooer. But there was a few things that he told me just sheerly like, I don't know, like side conversation that always stuck with me that I'm like, oh, that totally makes sense. Like, I never would have learned this had it not been for that guy.
Yeah.
And I could have very easily blown this guy off because he didn't have a good skill set.
Yeah.
But just, you know, trying to keep that open mind and listening, you can really pick up a lot of information. So like you said, you got bent over but you still kind of kept that open mind of like, well, I need to figure out what's going on and continue to move forward.
Yeah, you get the drive, you get the ambition from what a certain place or establishment, whatever it may be, or your personal situation, because everybody's felt pissed off about something before, or everybody's got a sob story. So you kind of take that, use that as a drive, use it as an ambition, but then also take the good things that happened and use that to your advantage. I mean, I'm like, your situation, being a sponge, there's so many. I went through several program directors in radio. Each one of them had really good traits.
Yeah.
You know, each one of them had really shitty traits. So you kind of learn, I almost learned more from the shitty traits than I did actually the good ones.
Yeah.
But then you remember, and then you kind of hone in, and then it's funny how life works out, because you end up, you know, meeting maybe a new client or a new person or a new friend that becomes an opportunity for you. And you end up kind of taking little things here and there that you learn from that asshole or that person you might not have been very fond of, but you use it, you know, and you need it, because what that in particular moment was terrific for that particular time. So it's kind of interesting that you brought that up, because it made me think of previous program directors or previous bosses who might have been real jackasses, but man, they were really good in certain areas, and you just take that and then you take what you didn't like about them and make sure you never do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of have that mental notebook and just kind of jot notes down the whole time of,
pretty much,
like you said,
yeah,
oh, this guy really did something good here.
Exactly.
Let's store that away for, you know, another day.
Yep.
And then you see the bad stuff and you're like, don't do that shit.
Don't ever fall into that trap.
Yeah, don't ever do that shit.
Exactly. Yep.
So I'm going to end this the way that I end every podcast.
Okay.
If you had one piece of advice to tell somebody, whether it's trying to maintain that drive or going on a limb, starting their own company, what would it be?
Focus. One thing? God, there's so many. It's really tough.
You say what you got to say.
I would say focus and make sure you surround yourself with individuals who support you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Well, with millennials now, they never like to pick up the phone.
That's true.
So, but I'll throw the number out there just for shits and giggles. It's 269-377-1674. Find us on Facebook, jellyfish.productions. Jelly is spelled with an I-E.
Okay.
So if you search the regular Jelly, you might not find us right away. But Jelly is spelled with an I-E. Facebook, Instagram, our website is jellyfish.productions. There's no .com.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a way to get a hold of us. Check out some of the branding we've done, commercials, and a lot of fucking fun weddings we've been a part of.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you joining me tonight, and we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. I know it was sporadic, but I like spontaneity, and thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for drinking out of that bear's mug.